here I am given all this gold, JD. And I'm just kidding. Sorry. So anyway,
I'm trying to write as fast as I can, but I was kind of hoping to get back in.
Sorry, I forgot to record. Okay, I'll back up just a tiny bit. So you're going to first frame for this person who needs to understand how to connect to the emotional system. You're going to frame that it exists, and then you're going to remind them that they are accountable for managing it in some form or fashion. And the way they manage it is by caring about it. So it is part of your job to care about how the people who you lead feel. Now, I don't need to tell Nicole that, because she already knows that. And she's overwhelmed by all the things. She's very connected. But in your instance, for this person, you've got to remind them that they're accountable for that. And then the next thing is, you say the most powerful way that you can help people is, one, to care about it, two, to be curious about it, and three is learn language patterns that mirror what's happening in the emotional system. So a concrete practical tool would be, when he's meeting with someone, is just to ask, how are you feeling about your work? Periodically ask the feeling question. How are you feeling about your work? And then pay close attention. Because if they say, I'm overwhelmed, I'm bored, I'm stressed, I'm tired, go the next level. What do you find overwhelming? What stresses you out the most? I just don't have enough hours in the day. I have too many things to do. Okay, are you up for a conversation about time management? Would that be helpful? Do we need to explore allocating workload differently? Do you feel like it's balanced right now? So that's how I would coach somebody who's kind of all numbers, all business, and I've checked my personality at the door and I'm just here to get work done. It is simply delusional. And so, you know, you don't want to say he's delusional, but you do want to say, that would be not the right conversation, but you do want to say, you do want to say, look, my job is to help you stay in touch with reality in your team. And the reality is their behaviors are governed by emotions. And so while I appreciate and respect your perspective on work, it is simply not realistic. And so let me help you get realistic about what your responsibilities and obligations are. There you go. I tried to make that a little more succinct. Mm-hmm. That's your way into the conversation. Am I ringing the right bells? You have more questions? You want to push back?
No pushback. That's hitting the nail on the head for what I think we'll get across to him. We had some of the conversation on Tuesday this week where he kind of said that and said, I'm done. I'm not going to deal with their emotions, or that's not my job. And I just kind of looked at him and he's like, well, it looks like you don't agree with that. And I was like, well, it's not for my place to agree or disagree with that, but let's see where we can go from here and keep going forward, because there is something involved in here. You can have your own opinion, but it's going to be a question of what your job needs to entail. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I would say in that case, because it looks like you disagree with that, I'd say absolutely I disagree with that. Like, I would just push directly back and say, yep, I disagree with that. And in fact, I'm going to make it even stronger than that and say, you know, so in that case, because it's a one-on-one meeting, you don't have to say, I think about that differently. Tell me more. You don't have to be overly gentle. If it's in a public meeting, you want to be careful. But in a direct one-to-one with a guy who has no care for the emotional system, you're going to have to be more direct with them. They need a more penetrating contact in order to feel, because they will feel it, that they'll have their own emotional encounter. In fact, sometimes you can even use that. You can say, I absolutely disagree with you. How does it feel when I say that? And you ask them to check in with their own feelings. Mm-hmm. So you're disrupting their own pattern of belief, which is, I don't care about feelings. I don't care about my own feelings. I don't care about their feelings. So evoke a feeling and see what it does for them. So again, that's a more advanced technique, but it's one that you could play with and just help them make contact with their own feeling. You could even say, if each day you walked in and I said, you're a complete waste of space and you suck at your job, you should do better. And it's not my job to help you figure that out. You just need to do better. How would that feel to you? If I didn't care about your feelings and I just wanted to say that, what would that feel like? Would you be motivated? Would you feel like that was fair? Would you? So your emotions matter.
Yeah.
And so do theirs. So it is your job and it is my job to care about their emotions. It isn't your job to be responsible for their emotions. It's not your job to fix every emotion, but it is your job to be curious about it and to care about it. And okay. Sorry to spend so much time on this, but this is so much the heartbeat of the differentiator between really brilliant managers and leaders and those that just kind of muddle their way through, is they're either blind to or overly enmeshed in and they can't seem to navigate either. And this, by the way, is art. It's not science, and it is hard work, and it's why it requires conversations like this, and you're going to make mistakes, and I'm a expert in it. I'm a student. I'm a perpetual student of it, and I'm always making mistakes too, and so that's part of the art. You keep learning and working and learning and working, and that's why I compare it to the ocean. It's not like I conquered the ocean. I got it all fixed and secured in its right spot, and now I figured it out. There's not a formula. But I think we've got some good tools here that can help.
Shane, mm-hmm. I was wanting to follow up on something you just said about not needing to fix the emotion, but just be curious and care. So you're curious, you ask the question, you let them know you care about it. I think where I overstep, and I'm guessing a lot of people who are leaders here as well, it's hard to just leave something hanging. I'm a fixer. So I go right into fix it mode. How do you be curious and care and not move into that fixing stage?
Two questions. You can move into the fixing phase. I just don't want you to feel responsible for their emotions. So it's not to say you can't solve something. It's to say that you're not responsible for their emotion. They're responsible for their emotion. I care about the feeling you're having. I'm curious about it. It's still not my feeling. It's still not my job to feel it for you, but I do care. And so you can ask two questions. The first question is, what led you to the conclusion you currently have? It's another way to say, what happened that leads to the feeling you're having? But I would just say, how did you get to this conclusion? Like, this person did X, Y, and Z to me and blah, blah, blah. And you go, okay, great. How did you get to this conclusion? So that's one way to ask a question. There's dozens of ways to ask that question. But what you're really trying to get at is you want them to reflect on themselves for a moment. How did I get in this experience? What happened that led to this experience? So now you're getting curious. And then the next question you ask is very simple. What do you need? It doesn't mean you're going to give them what they ask for. You just want to understand, what do you need? Does that make sense? I mean, is it clear why I'm saying this? Okay. Often what that does is it forces them to take responsibility. Because if you go, what do I need? Well, what I need is for that person to not be that way. Okay. And the next question is, what's in your control? Well, what I need is space. What I need is an apology. What I need is, okay, sounds like you need an apology. What happens if you don't get an apology? So that's the next question. And all you're doing is you're trying to get them back into the place of, you're still ultimately responsible for what. I understand you might have been a victim of some perpetration and somebody did something bad and who knows what. And it's also possible that you're inventing a story in your head that they didn't actually do that and they didn't actually mean it. I don't really know. What I do know is I can ask you to reflect on what it is you need, want, et cetera. And then after you hear their answers, you can decide whether you want to engage to solve that, or whether you need to leave that to them. you know, that's something you have to use judgment. And then when you need to do it. And you can simply ask their permission. You know, this sounds really important to you. It's important to me too. I have a list of things that I know I have to get done that have a level of urgency. Is it okay if you give me 3 days before we address this? I'm going to put a meeting on the calendar right now so that you know that it's going to get addressed. I don't say that I'm going to do it and not do it. I actually secure the meeting on the calendar for 3 days from now. I need about 3 days to address it. Let's set a meeting right now for 3 days from now. I'm going to get on that with you. That way you're able to kick the can down the road, but you've secured an agreement and you stabilized their emotion in that moment. And you can even make a request if you want. I'm going to need 3 days to do this, but here's my ask of you. I need you to not talk about this with people in the office. If you want to call friends, if you need to talk to others about it, I really need you to not talk about this with people in the office until we have our meeting. That's my ask of you. Is that something you can agree to? And that's another way you do that, nip it in the bud without actually fixing it all right then and there. A big part of our job as leaders is to model maturity in the system. Model emotional maturity, which is I'm connected to my emotions, but I'm not overly governed by them. I'm connected to your emotions, but I'm not taking responsibility for those emotions. And I know how to create proper brackets, parking lots, sequencing, timing. And I know how to ask for things. And I know how to form agreements. And I know how to honor those agreements. All of that is you modeling the way for behavior you expect of them in return.
Big takeaway I had there, Shane, from that was that we're talking about their emotions and not the actual problem or what's being caused. So if they have financial issues, we're not solving financial issues, but we're dealing with emotions that's associated with those. Uh-huh. And that's probably the biggest thing and biggest divide that I'm trying. I just came to the realization with what he's doing. He's thinking he has to solve their marital problems or their financial issues or two friends fighting, those type of things. And it's not that, he's just needing to address their emotions.
Yep, absolutely. John Mark, you have a question in the chat, which is, this is the art of management. Are you going to share actual tools? Yeah, these are the tools. So what I'm describing right now, the questions that I'm suggesting you ask, the way you frame conversations, these are concrete, practical tools that you can deploy. Now, when I say there's an art to it, what I mean is, it's not like in every situation, you can just ask the question, what do you need? And it's going to get you the answer. There are times where that doesn't work. So I'm just giving you examples of the kind of the main tools that I like to use. And so if you bring a really specific issue to me, then I can design a custom tool just for you in that situation. And if you, go ahead.
Yeah, no, Shane. I think what I'm getting at is the advice you're giving us is really good. It's really practical. It's interesting. I resonate a lot with Nicole's situation because I work in healthcare as well. And so maybe what I was actually asking about is, you know, there's lots and lots of advice we get in the course of the day as a strategic leader or even as a CEO. And maybe what I was specifically asking you about is if there's a quick, rapid reference. Not that the answers are in those tools. No, that's not what I'm actually saying. You know, this is the formula to ask questions. But just those reminders so that, CEOs have something in their back pocket to just, before you go,
yes.
These are not easy meetings, these emotional meetings. Why I think we all signed up for this is not to underestimate the load and the baggage and even the, and I do know it's a lot of, you know, we're very empathetic in some of us, in our nature. So you end up carrying a lot of this as a transfer. This is how you're managing the whole organization, is by taking on some of the problems. So I think you're giving us some really good guidance, but what I was actually really asking you is there some rapid reference, easy to access tools that help us in our management journey?
There are.
Practice, the more these things become your nature, but
how we there are, yes. So if you go to, and I'll just share my screen here in just a minute so that I can answer that question. And thank you for that question. It's a great question. So if you go into the like module one, I guess it didn't, I thought there was a download. I need to build a download. This is the first one that I want leaders to know and understand. This is the probably one of the most important things to understand about the nature of the emotional system. The idea of everyone has three jobs. And so this, fortunately, this slide happens to show you the summary of that video. And there's sort of this idea of the waterline, right? There's the thing above the line and there's all the stuff below the line. And everything below the line is the emotional system. Everything above the line tends to be just sort of the task, the responsibilities, the accountabilities of a given job. That's really everybody's third job. The job you hired somebody for is their third job. And it is only a job to perform. That's what you've hired them for. Execute given tasks, perform at a certain level. But they have other jobs that predate that third job and will postdate that third job. And that is to find fulfillment or enjoyment or engagement, joy, happiness, pick your word. And the other is to grow, to learn, to expand. Those two things are essential aspects of a fulfilling job, work, life. And if you aren't fulfilled and if you aren't learning and growing, you're not performing. Now, the same is also true. If you're not performing, you're not going to feel very fulfilled. So they're all interconnected and linked. But the first thing is there's a couple of questions that are in this video that are good for you to be asking yourself and potentially others, depending on the kind of conversation you're having with them. This is really high level stuff, but it's a quick reference sheet. And I could have sworn I built a reference sheet and I don't know where it is. It should be in here. I'm gonna go look it up. It's not there. Yeah, so there should be, I'll go dig it up and probably attach it here, but that's one. Then the other, kind of just quick reference guide. I think we talked about this last week was, I think it's module three. JD, I think we talked about this for you. Is it module three, the switches? You may not remember.
I think it was three.
Was it module three? Here it is. John Mark, video 11 of module three. Is the 10 most common switches. Switches are just referred to the phrases that you most want to say as a leader. So things like, I completely disagree with you. You're not listening. Let me finish. Stop being a jerk. You micromanage too much. I don't trust you. You don't communicate. You're too focused on the negative. You're too passive. You talk too much. These are all feelings one as a leader might have. And then I give you literally phrases to memorize instead. Let me finish. Is it okay if I complete my thought? Stop being a jerk. I know this matters a lot to you. I'd like to hear you better. That will happen if you take a different approach, right? Like there are these simple, and it's not like you only have to use these switches, but they give you the basic formula of language patterns that allow you to make contact in ways that get you more of what you want instead of any one of these, which is going to be a negative domino that almost always creates negative outcomes. Now, even when I say that, there are times when I've said, you're not listening to me. You know, I'm so frustrated. I'll just say it. And I'm like, I teach people not to say that. And there I went and said it, you know, so it's normal to do this stuff, right? So I'm not trying to create, you know, that you're not a human, but I do want you to see there are absolutely practical tools. Now, there are a ton of these throughout the module. I've just shown you two examples that you can go to kind of help you anchor your thinking. So, okay. John Mark says, looks like you're good. All right. Awesome. Thank you. Okay. Who else would like to weigh in? I don't want to have to call on people, but I will.
You can see Nicole is smiling, so I think it resonated with her as well. Well, go back into those tools. I should chew my camera as well so that people can actually read what I'm doing.
Welcome. Thank you.
It's been a kind of one of those bad hair days. That's kind of why I was feeling shy.
You're having a bad hair day?
Yep. Believe it or not, this is not my best look. But.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, your hair looks fine to me, but but I'm probably not the most discerning eye. I think we have a plastic surgeon and we have a med spa owner. And so I think both of them may have opinions about the cosmetics that they're seeing, but I don't have any judgment. Awesome. Okay. So who else has questions? I mean, I do want to talk about John Mark's hair for the most of the call, but some of the call, I think we should do some coaching. Okay. Tim, are you back on your feet? You were sick last time we talked.
I am. Yes, sir.
Good.
Back in the office.
How are things?
Rolling along. Just moving along, trying to get through all the things. I don't have any big things to report other than some of the things that you and I have talked about. I've figured out some of the things, my triggers, and which have been helpful, helping me get out of things that have bothered me and had better conversations with people. So those are things that have come out of this.
Tim is referring to the part of the work that we do in hard conversations, module 2. I think in there, I call them tripwires. Tripwires are those little things that if you set them off, you know, a big explosion goes off. So like tripwires are understanding those things that are really important to you that will create in you comments like, you're not listening to me. You know, because you got triggered, you're no longer in that state of calm. And so it's really worth your time to go through the video. I think it's called Tripwires in module 2, where I give you a map of kind of the most common tripwires for almost any personality type. And you will see, you can kind of go through and like literally circle, here are the ones that are clearly mine. So like for me, one of my tripwires is being misunderstood. You know, if somebody assigns a motive to me I don't have, or assigns a character trait or an intent, and I don't have that, I feel very misunderstood and I get really worked up about it. I'm like a dog in a bone. I got to run it to ground until they see me accurately, you know, whereas other people are like, I don't care if you misunderstand me. That's your problem. You know, they have no problem with it. And so just knowing those vulnerabilities are actually really, really helpful in how you navigate hard conversations. So Tim, do you want to share with the group, you feel comfortable sharing what your tripwire or triggers were or aren't?
Well, one of the things, so some of the stuff on managing up has been good. I run the US office for a global company. The person that I report to is 9,000 miles away, and we have very, very little interaction. And oftentimes the interaction just ends up to be fairly negative. We only talk about the bad stuff. And so some of the stuff on managing up has been helpful. Just the fact that it's mostly negative about problems and those kind of things. So what I've done and some of the changes that I made was I just had a meeting, a hard conversation just to say, hey, can we start scheduling our meetings? Because this would happen ad hoc. This person owns the company, so runs 24 hours a day, which I've owned my own company and I get how that works. But he would call me his Saturday morning, which would be Friday night. I've worked all week, been beat up by customers all week long. And then I get negativity on Friday night at 9 o'clock when I'm tired. And so I said, hey, can we just schedule our meetings? And then I'm planned, prepared, and whatever you've got, we can plan ahead on what we're going to discuss. And it just reframed the whole conversation just to do that one little thing, is just schedule a meeting. Don't do this ad hoc. And so now we've got regular meetings scheduled and agendas. And the other piece is your piece about the three roles when managing up. the mirror and the guide, and the third one, I don't remember, but yeah. So getting to the place where, because I was a business owner, I took ownership of the business in maybe an unhealthy way.
Yeah.
So took the business as my baby. And now I've got somebody who actually owns the business who's really is their baby, and I'm fighting them on their own baby. So changing that narrative so that when, here's in your message about the guide, here are my concerns. Here's what I see as a problems if we go that route. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's your business. You want to go that route, we're going to go that route. And so being able to just adjust and say, hey, I have problems with this direction, but here are my concerns. And then also this person, and I don't think this is really a problem. It's just a problem of that they run a global organization, have a lot of hats and a lot of focus. If I took what he said specifically and in very black and white terms and ran off with it, I would probably destroy the company. So I have to ask a lot of questions to get the nuance on what it's there. Because in black and white, it really would be a bad implementation of what he really meant behind the scenes. So getting some of that in there has been helpful, because sometimes I hear the black and white and don't get the nuance and need the nuance, because, you know, anyway, that helps us get a better role. So
super awesome. Great news. A couple of things you said that I think are so critical. And you just identified again, dominoes, right? Like if one of the things that I tell people that I try to do is create very small things with very big impact. And I don't have to be the one to create them. But if you just did what you did, that's a domino, which is I'm going to schedule my meetings so that I'm not getting called at Friday at the end of the day. That is, first of all, respecting your emotional system and going, my emotional system matters a lot. As a leader, my emotional system matters a lot. It's not just caring about the company's emotional system, it's your own. So you caring enough about it to go, I'm not going to be effective or successful if that keeps happening, and I have some ability to make change. Enormous, you know, huge. Congratulations. That thing alone was an amazing decision. And then I'm really glad, for those of you who don't know, there's a bonus module, you probably know, but there's a bonus module called Managing Up and Across. It's the last bonus five. And that's what Tim was referring to, I believe. Tim, is that what you're talking about? You'd watched that and started using some of the techniques there. And so there are different, what I do is try to help you and all of you as a reminder, anytime you communicate up through a hierarchy, you are always communicating through a filter. And that filter is always, I'm listening and I'm suspicious. I'm not sure I trust. What's your hidden motive? What's your agenda? And so that module shows you how to get around that filter so that you're actually heard in a different way. And one part of getting around that filter isn't just conversation. It's actually helping you emotionally divest of outcomes. So a big part of what Tim was talking about was, it's his business, not my business. And I have to divest myself a little bit of this so that I can be credibly heard. Because if I'm so emotionally invested, now we're at odds, we're in a power play, and he's got the power, so he's going to win. And not only is he going to win, he's not going to trust me after that, because I've effectively demonstrated that I don't respect or trust him. And without, no one's saying that out loud, but that's what he'll receive or she'll receive if she's or he is in a power position. And so that's a lot of what Tim was talking about. And so he was referring to metaphors I use to describe what is your role when you're managing up. One is a mirror, one is a guide, a facilitator of decision making, a neutral facilitator of decisions, consultant. There are different metaphors to describe your role when you're managing up or when you're managing across. And the weirdest thing that happens is the less connected you are to the outcome, the more honest you are about your perspective, and the more willing you are to do the thing that you disagree with, the more you'll be heard credibly going forward.
Yeah.
Thanks for that update, Tim. Anything else you want to check in on?
There were other conversations that we had about, there was something you were asking about triggers. So there was, I think probably one of my concerns, and I'm in a place that was a problem, was somebody who did something that appeared that they might be stabbing me in the back within the organization, and not sure still if I misread that or whatever, but just getting a little bit of dealing with that, processing that event and making sure that I'm in a healthy place afterward has changed my perspective on that person and the organization. So that's been helpful.
Give me an example. What happened?
So in this particular event, there was a meeting that we had that was kind of pushing in a new direction. It was more strategic, and we invited some people into strategic conversations that probably it's above their pay grade or above their thinking to think strategically. So that was the first mistake. And a lot of people were really having a hard time going there, thinking strategically, going through that process. And so there was a lot of complaints about that particular meeting, which I've never really invited that many people into a strategic meeting before. And so that caused somebody to say, hey, you know, somebody suggested maybe I should take over the meeting next time.
Oh, and, I remember. Yeah.
Right. And so that, you know, I've run 1,000 meetings and never had a complaint about a meeting before. I just never invited everybody into a strategic thinking planning session before. And so, it struck a nerve. And this is also a person that I was a little bit more concerned about whether they wanted to get me to step aside anyway. And so it hit a really hard trigger. So harder than I thought. So it kind of, that and a couple other things in the office, I have really huge stresses going on, you know, like the potential for lawsuits if something goes wrong with a customer, those kind of things. And those weren't sending me off. It was the interpersonal pieces with employees that was actually sending me sideways. And I was surprised because I've got way bigger stresses than these, but these are the ones that are actually kind of causing a lot of inner turmoil for me. And so getting through, just being able to process that and realize that and then make some adjustments on those relationships and how I interact and different things has led to at least better positive outcomes internally, whether, and if, you know, really the outcome externally comes out of a positive outcome internally. So if I change internally, the external is going to happen anyway. I don't have to work on the external so much, right?
Yeah.
So,
so what shift did you make internally?
Well, so I had two. I had that negative interaction, just being able to process and get in a place where I'm not walking around with a shield all the time. Right? Walking around looking to self-protect at every corner, it just gets in a wrong headspace, right? Mm-hmm. And then with another employee who is, I've tried to help, but really has vomited on me almost every time I've tried to help them, and it's got a lot of negativity. I just kind of got to the place where I can't, this is, you know, you can't be responsible for their, what you were just saying, I can't be responsible for them. And I kind of need to put up some boundaries to the place where if they can't change, they kind of need to go find another job. Gets me in a space where I don't have to live in a place where I'm feeling like, not feeling like that there's a boundary there that's properly established. So, this is a long story, but this person has had a lot of trauma in their life, and you know, I tried to help, and it's a big long saga to that story, but you know, anyway, trying to help, but you know, feel like I punched the tar baby and got stuck into the problem with it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate all of that. Nicole, I see your question as well. And Megan as well. We'll get to that in just a second. So One observation I have is, you know, when leaders try to involve, I think it's really good you noticed, like, that was maybe the wrong people to have in the room for that meeting. There's another way to do kind of the same thing that gets at what you're after, which is some participation in it. And there are two ways to do it. One is you identify the problem and then you ask them to go do work before the meeting. And that work could be, for example, like, do a SWOT analysis for your section of whatever you're working on, right? Depends on what kind of business you're doing and how big and vast, right? But one is to get them to go out and prep and research and prepare, then have them bring lots of input, take all that input under advisement, then go away, design 80% of the solution, bring that to back to them and say, based on everything you told me, I put together this solution. It's about 80% of the way done. I need you all to help me take it the final 20%. And that way you create all the necessary boundary conditions for their input. And, you know, some people may not be capable of half of that, in which case they shouldn't be in the room, but that way you're giving them like really defined places to play that are still informing a strategic vision. And the value of involving them is that their buy-in to that strategy goes up immensely and way more rapidly than if you had just gone off in isolation and solved it. And so your instinct to say, I want to have everybody join in is the right instinct. There are just some other structures that might protect you a bit more and protect them. You good, Tim? Okay, awesome. Megan, it looks like you did a direct, okay, let me just see here. Any suggested tools to help with reassessing structure and function optimization within the roles of my managers and employees, as we have had to reallocate and adjust during COVID and just reassessing and implementing those functions and priorities, kind of a spring cleaning. Glad you asked. Anything else you want to say about that, Megan?
Nope, just again, we're trying to buy time. We can't buy time, but I think that by doing this, we may find time that has been reallocated and misappropriated. And things that are going to stay now that COVID's gone, that may not need as much of that. So just looking at the whole pie and responsibilities within my team.
Good.
So anybody else, have you guys done this? Any suggestions? Is there any recommended tools or things we should be looking at?
So and I will let others weigh in. I'll just quickly answer with a couple of things to guide your thinking. Module 4, how to organize people in work. If you go in there, it's taking its sweet time. First thing I would do is just, you know, start reviewing some of these videos. Understand how you create structure, the questions that guide structure. There's some downloads here about how you define roles, create structure, the rules of structure. RACI charts can be really useful depending on the complexity that you're dealing with. Make sure you understand how they work. So those are the big ones. I would start kind of with those videos there, and they'll help guide you. And not everything in there is what you need. It may be overkill, but start looking at them going, okay, which of these things might help guide my thinking around that? And I'm happy to go deeper into that, but I thought, well, I'll just start there and you can review that. And then when we come back next week, tell me kind of what you learn. What questions do you still have based on what you watched? And then I can take you in any direction. I have other resources beyond these, but these are the kind of baseline, like start here and then we can figure out based on your questions, which makes the most sense. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank
you. Okay. Anybody else want to weigh in on what Megan's talking about? And I don't know if there's a specific question you're wanting people to weigh in on.
Sounds like a lot of repositioning of people and kind of reorganization, which is that's what we're going through right now. And one question I have related to that and kind of managing or at least being curious about the emotional experience of people who are being moved around. One thing that I found in this reorganization is that there's people who I've worked with side by side as their direct leader and, you know, for years, and they're subject matter experts and they're great at what they do. And for reasons you know, about what was going to be the best for the collective. I had to make a decision about who was going to be moved up into, you know, the head of marketing role. And this person is qualified from a technical perspective, and what he's doing is great with, you know, the team he's doing that with. And for me to pull him up into that big leadership role would be removing a Jenga block from the tower, if you will. And the person who's in the head of marketing role now, while she's maybe not technically or analytically as savvy, she's great human, people, leader kind of person. And that was the best fit for the team. Managing the emotional response of, but we were in this together, but I stayed here for you, but we, you know, now there's a layer in between. How do we, I'm having trouble navigating that because we do on a technical level speak the same language when it comes to just digital and analytics and things like that. We speak the same language, he and I. And I want to be able to continue that open flow of communication because it's just necessary, while also empowering the new leader who I put in a position who, you know, he respects as a peer, but feels a little bit weird and has been congratulatory and a good sport about the whole thing, but does feel a little bit like, hey, who is she for me to be reporting to her? She doesn't actually know or speak the language that I speak. And I understand where he's coming from. So I'm trying to kind of set her up for success while also, you know, maintaining that good relationship with him. It's a tough, I'm trying to untangle that. I don't even know how to ask the question, I guess.
Let me make sure I understand the question first. Yes. So what I hear you saying is you were a peer with two other people?
He was a peer. I was the head. There was two peers. One of them had to move up. And I still need to have direct communication with the person who stayed at the level he stayed because of the language we speak and the technical skill and the expertise. So we will be involved. At the same time, what I don't want to do is overstep.
I misunderstood. When you were talking about she and her, you were saying from his perspective about you.
Yeah.
I thought there was a third person involved. I was like, wait, who's the woman? Okay, I got it. That was my mistake. Sorry. Got to clean out my ears. So you're just saying, I'm now somebody's boss. I used to be their peer. How do we deal with that?
Someone else used to be the two people who were the layer below me. They were peers. And now one of them, now there's a superior subordinate dynamic.
Oh, so there is a third person. So you're saying you were the boss over two, and now you've created the boss kind of a one over. So it's what you, a woman and this guy.
Yeah, to simplify it, yes, there was two people who were under me who were peers, and I had to choose one of them to promote as the head of marketing. The other one had to stay where he is because that's where it's going to best benefit the collective.
Yeah.
She, who I moved up in the leadership position, doesn't necessarily speak the same technical language as the person who's left at the level below. So there's going to be communication between me and him for the reason that it's just our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I want that, and also set her up for success and also alleviate his anxieties about reporting to someone who doesn't speak his language.
Yeah. So a couple of things I would say there. One is just it is good for everybody on here to understand the moment you reorganize anybody and you give them a new boss, it is as if you fired someone from one job, rehired them to another job that they didn't apply for. That's the emotional experience. 70% of your experience of a job comes from your direct boss. That does not mean you shouldn't do that. You absolutely will need to do that. It's good to understand it when you do it. My guess is that, you know, Stephanie, we're still getting to know each other, but I would say that in your instance, you're going to be hyper attuned to it, right? Like that's probably the work you and I have to do more of is around boundaries, which is have the key conversations you need to have and then release it. And so there are two issues. One is, sounds like you already had the conversation with the guy who would have kind of the most emotional injury and the feeling of, oh my gosh, I got a new boss and this is hard. Fortunately, it's pretty minor. It's still in the same universe. It's someone that he's working with. He knows, there's going to be a little bit of a change, but he's going to be okay. The issue you're talking about is around somebody who now manages somebody else who has experience that they don't have. Mm-hmm. This is super common in any organization, happens all the time. Those, the most important thing to understand is just because you have the authority to make decisions doesn't mean you're qualified to make decisions. Mm-hmm. So to help her understand that, you would simply say, first question is, are you qualified to be providing guidance and decision-making around this part of his job? If the answer is no, then you have two choices. You will either, as a leader, have to trust him, or you will have to find somebody else. If you don't trust that person, you'll have to find somebody else to coach you and inform you about what's happening. So that could be an inside mentor, an outside mentor. Classic example of this was the head of a major retail furniture company was QB2, I think is what it's called. And he left being the CEO of that company to become the CEO of Herman Miller, which is a company that designs furniture. Herman Miller sold in QB2, right? So it was, he just assumed, oh, I'm just going from one job to another. It's the same basic industry. I know what I'm doing. Retail and manufacturing are completely different industries. And so this CEO had the authority, but not the credibility to make decisions. So he had to trust his team and or find outside mentors who could guide him to vet his team. So the team would say, oh, we can't do that. That'll take too long. He'd go to some really high level expert in furniture manufacturing and say, my team's telling me that it's going to take too long and it's impossible. And that guy will go, oh, it's absolutely impossible. We did it in these six ways. You need to go back and tell him this, that, and the other thing. And he'll go back and go, okay, I believe it's possible. Why don't you try this, this, and this? And then the team gets it done. Mm-hmm. Or he might go to that mentor and say, hey, they're telling me this. And he's like, yeah, they're right. That's not, I've never seen anybody do that. That's absolutely KPI. That's within the benchmark. And they go, okay, that's within the benchmark. So just that's the first thing to understand is asking the question and giving her permission to not have to make those decisions. To say, look, you've been put in this position. That's for management reasons. When it comes to decision-making around X, Y, and Z, I don't think you're qualified to make those decisions. And you can either figure out how to learn to become qualified, you can hire a mentor, you can ask me, or you can just trust him. Whatever you decide to do is fine. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Am I getting at?
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah. And what I wanted to do, because she will be asking me a lot. And what I wanted to do was just not, where, how do you toe the line between, you know, at the end of the day, I'm still in charge, but I want to set her up for success to where she's not feeling overstepped by me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You just have the direct conversation about why you promoted her and what okay. her strengths are and where you want her to play in her A game. And, okay. and then let her know, while you have oversight of this area, my assessment, and I think you'll agree, that's not really your area of expertise. And so when it comes to that, I'm going to be really hands-on. Or when it comes to that, you just need to trust him and I wouldn't interfere too much. Or whatever directive you think is appropriate, just have okay. a direct conversation about expectations and form okay. some agreements about, here's what I think your A game is. Here's what you can expect from me around that. Here's where I think your isn't your strength. And here's what you can expect from me around that. Or here's what I expect of you around that.
Okay, thank
so
you.
So that's how you have those conversations.
Okay. Thanks. Sound good? Sorry, long-windedness, everyone.
it wasn't your fault. That was me. I think everybody else figured it out. I was slow to the party. John Mark, you got a hand up there. And then we'll go to Nicole.
Yeah, mine is quick. It's actually more of a comment. I think there was an earlier question regarding post-pandemic and restructuring. And actually, Stephanie's question is really classical because we are actually undergoing a big restructuring in my organization. So you really to really find efficiencies. I am going to be dealing with a lot of these same type of questions because as I'd said to Shane as I was onboarding into this, I do a lot of lateral management because I have a lot of peers as well. And it's not any real authoritative hierarchy that I have, but it's more technical. So it's that lingo of getting things aligned. So not that I have any question for now, but yes, post-pandemic, there's a lot of restructure, reorg that's happening in many places. My part of the organization, I think I last week when we talked, I said the Saskatchewan Health Authority has 40,000 employees. My neck of the woods is much smaller than that. It's about 1,000 people. So just a slice of that. So I know it's a complicated thing. But
awesome.
That's Stephanie's question. Yeah.
So you just raised something, and I think it's also related to what Stephanie asked, and I want to just highlight it for everybody. Module one, there is a video that I recommend everybody who has to do change management, which, by the way, I've kind of recently come to the conclusion that all leadership is just change management. It's all you're doing is leading change, making decisions that change people's lives. It is video 14 of module one, which is a process I called staging the ascent. And it's really the kind of fundamental playbook for how you lead change in an organization, how you get people bought in. I've seen it used in huge, I've used it in very big organizations to great effect. People get bought in much more rapidly. So review that. It's not a long video. I mean, it's very simple, the process. How it gets executed is, can be a little more complicated, and that's where coaching can help. So if you know you're on the eve of a big change and you've got to initiate it or you've got to play it out somehow, this can be a really helpful playbook. I've had middle managers give this to senior leaders who used it and were that middle manager got promoted because of it. So it's a very effective kind of tool. So take a look at that if you're seeing a lot of change. And Stephanie, same with you. If you're doing a lot of organizational redesigning, combination of what I gave Megan, which is those first few videos around how to think about structure and the staging the ascent, those two things together are really, really helpful as you plan and prepare for that. Good. I think we have a few more minutes. I have Nicole's question here. I'm still happy to engage that. Let's see here. As managers, we are human and want our intentions to be understood. What is a realistic and healthy space to be in relationally with employees and subordinates? I think what we've been talking about this whole time is the emotionally healthy space, which is I care, I'm curious, and I'm clear on what I have control over and what I don't. And I execute the things I have control over, and I release anything I don't have control over. And that's how you triangulate kind of, do I understand? Am I connected? But am I also not overwhelmed by it and making business decisions guided by that only? They really have to be a kind of in concert with one another. And what I would generally recommend, Nicole, is let's say somebody's going to move or somebody wants something different or somebody doesn't like their role and they come and they ask you, can I do this instead of that and all this stuff. Before you decide yes or no, the first question you ask is, if this person didn't exist and didn't have this request, would I design that for the business? And if the answer is no, then think really hard about why you're going to give it to them. And if the answer is maybe, that's not a bad idea. In fact, it didn't occur to me until they brought it up. But now that they're bringing it up, it's not a bad idea. And even if they were to leave, I would still want to do that. That's a pretty good indicator, right? So and it's not to say you can't or shouldn't ever do something that is strictly about the business, but it does help you get really clear about the fact that you're accountable to a business first, not to an individual's needs. And so that's the thing for you as a leader and a manager to ask yourself, like, cold, hard, agnostic, take humans out of it. Is this the right organizational design for what I need to achieve the organization's mission?
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Awesome. We got 5 more minutes. Anybody else have a question, comment, observation? Okay. Going once. Can always check in next week. Going twice. Here we go. I'm about to hit the thing. It's sold. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Enjoyed our week, and we'll talk next week. Have a good one.
Thanks so much.
Hi, Janice. This is John Mark here. I'm glad I was able to connect with you because I have like 2